This episode is sponsored by the Catholic Financial Planners Network. More later in the show.
We get asked all the time about how we're different from Dave Ramsey and if it even matters to have a Catholic worldview around finances. Keep listening and find out in today's episode of The Catholic Money Show. Since we began our business back in 2017, there are probably a top five frequently asked questions that we're continuously answering for folks. But I would say easily there is one that stands out above all the others. It is the number one most asked question, and it is, how are you different from Dave Ramsey or Ramsey Solutions or Financial Peace University or the Seven Baby Steps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Insert Dave Ramsey and his work here. How are you different? And how are you teaching about money from a Catholic perspective and worldview versus how he is sharing it from a Christian or a biblical worldview?
And I'd say this comes up a lot because for so long, whether it was people you talked to in person, groups and message boards and all of that online, if a question gets thrown out there about money, well, Dave Ramsey, what have you heard about Dave? What
all
about Financial
comments.
Peace University? What have you done to Dave? That's what you hear. And so you just think, oh, well, there we go. We've got Financial Peace University being led at parishes. This must be the way to do it. And so when you've got some folks saying, I think there might be a little bit more to consider. Well, okay. Well, up to this point, I guess I've been told this is what it is. So what is different? What are we missing out on here? What do you have to offer?
And to be fair, there really hasn't been anybody unpacking this in modern times from a Catholic perspective. That's part of why it was a little bit difficult for us, even in the early years of our business, to figure out our
marriage.
What are those differences? You know, Dave was absolutely a huge help for us. We respect him. He was a big influence in us, in our life, in getting a budget going and in getting out of debt, getting our emergency savings established. That was a really big deal for us. And so it felt a little bit disrespectful to talk about the differences because, you know, he was such a help for us. It's not disrespectful to just talk about different perspectives. But then we've also just learned so much as we ourselves have dove into the resources and the riches that our Catholic faith has. No, it's not necessarily being formally unpacked. We got to go a digging, but we've had our shovels out, our miner's caps on, and we've been studying. And it's time, you know, we've had these teachings and perspectives in our podcast and in our course, et cetera, but it's time to just succinctly bring those together in a podcast series because these differences are just too important to not clarify and to kind of have them in one succinct spot.
Yes.
So we're going to take those frequently asked question of how are you different from Dave Ramsey? And we're going to talk about those differences. Some of them are going to be minor. Some of them are going to be major. But we're going to unpack what they are over the next several episodes. Now, again, we're going to be leaning more into the differences between us, right? There's a whole lot, probably more that we are similar on.
Absolutely.
Than we are different. We're both going to say, yes, you should have emergency savings.
Yep.
I mean, that's a given. So we're not going to cover that territory. It's going to be more the things that we might have a different perspective on because of our Catholic faith.
I experienced something similar to this. I'd say as our life has gone on, especially since we've gotten married, there have been a richness of new resources and ways to access those resources to learn more about the Catholic faith and the Catholic perspective on things. Early days, though, when I was going through my conversion in college, I would run into a bunch of stuff, and it was from the Christian, just plain Christian perspective, because there really wasn't a Catholic speaking into these things. And as I'm going through some of these resources, as I'm trying to, and then once we're married, learn to be a better husband, all right, well, I can read these books, and they're definitely beneficial. I'm learning things. My soul's being edified, all this. But I do have to read it with a different part of my brain turned on, evaluating every claim that's being made. Mm-hmm. Especially when I know we're getting to some of these chapters where it might get a little more different than what the church teaches in her wisdom and in truth. So, you know, if we're doing a parish event for engaged or married couples, and one of the topics we want to talk about is NFP, natural family planning, the marital relations. Well, we're not going to go and just find some Baptist preacher to come down and talk to our couples about that. We know there's going to be some misunderstandings mm-hmm. between what he will probably be teaching and what the truth is. I've run into this in countless situations. I think it stares out glaringly in those areas because the Catholic position is so clear-cut and, unfortunately, has been abandoned by so many of our Protestant brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. We had Humanae Vitae come out kind of in the mid-20th century, mm-hmm. right? Are we in the 21st century?
Yes.
I always get that mixed up. It was the 19s, but it was the 20th. Anyway, neither here nor there. But that came out a long time before the laity, I would say, really began to understand the richness of those teachings. It was years later, you know, we had theology of the body, and then we started to have apologists and philosophers and theologians beginning to unpack that in modern language, challenging couples to live the fullness out of their human sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so what we've seen over the last 30 years with NFP, I think we are about to see that with money. And that might sound a little bold. Money's the new NFP.
Ooh, put it on t-shirt.
But I see personal finances and economics and money just becoming, it's rising to the top in so many areas of our culture. You see it on TikTok. You see it on Instagram, everywhere. YouTubers, there's personalities talking about this, and the financial literacy of people is going up. That's a really good thing. But the church has to come into this conversation. We have to declare what the truth is on all of these matters when it comes to personal finances. And we have to unpack this from an authentically Catholic worldview and to be able to identify exactly what the church teaches around these things, mm-hmm. finances, economics, generosity, wealth, poverty, and more. No more just vanilla, vague strategies that look like everybody else in society or that say, here's one little cherry-picked Bible verse, go do this thing. No, we want to dive deep. We want to mine the riches of the Catholic faith around money, and we want to awaken in the church something new so that we can, our not so secret, raise up the most financially literate and also generous generation that the church has ever seen. Now, not the end goal there is not just to get people handling money well. There's an end goal to that even. Mm-hmm. And the results of those two things combined is just deeper yeses to the new evangelization. And what does that really mean? That means making sure that every person on this planet encounters Jesus Christ. That's our not so secret end goal here and why we care about money, because money can make those things happen. And that's why we are on this mission.
That's crazy to think about, isn't it? The reason I want you to learn how to budget your money is so someone who you will probably never meet can hear the gospel, respond to it, say yes, and live forever in heaven. That's why your money is important. Mm-hmm.
The stakes are high. Of course.
That's crazy.
We want you to have peace in your everyday life.
Absolutely.
Obviously. It's both and here, people. So we're going to take care of that, but we have a higher end goal as well. And so obviously we cannot handle all of these differences we're about to unpack in just this episode.
No.
Really, we wanted to do the introduction here in this episode. And then we've got a couple kind of more minor differences that we're going to tackle ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you've got any questions, maybe you've read some of Dave's books, maybe you listen to the show or the podcast, maybe you watch them on YouTube, whatever it might be. Hey, I know he says this a lot, or what about that? Please send them on in. You can email us at email@walletwin.com. I don't know, put Dave in the subject or something like that.
So we don't lose it.
Yep. And there's also a link in the show notes where you can record like a voicemail.
Please.
And ask your question that way. Those are really fun because we can play those on future episodes. So email us, email@walletone.com, or click the link in the show notes to leave a voicemail for us with your question. We can include that in future parts of this series.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say before we get to the meat?
I did.
I had a feeling.
This is this idea. I've been working on this. I had a little mini epiphany light. Epiphanito? I had an epiphanito earlier today. We as Catholics, we need to handle our money like Catholics. In that, we can't just do what the world's doing in a Catholic way. Right? We're called to a radical call to live our lives for the God who became man and died for his creation so that we can live forever with him. That's kind of crazy if you line that up with what the world is saying. So, and that influences the way we treat each other, the way we treat our spouses, have our relationships, raise our children, all of that is different because of that. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh yeah, you know, we just kind of do what everybody else does, but I don't know, we're a little bit nicer.
Mm.
This isn't just like some Christian finance stuff. This is how does a Catholic live out intentionally their faith in the realm of money and possessions and material goods. Mm. And that should be radically different, right? Anybody can follow Jesus for so long until he starts saying some kind of crazy stuff. And then you have to decide, is this God or is it not?
Mm.
With our finances, anybody could listen to what Dave is teaching or what we're teaching. You know, there's lots of folks who say, oh, yeah, you know, Dave, you know, you don't have to be Christian or you can just kind of ignore that a little bit or whatever. I think if we're doing this right, when we explain certain things, it's going to be a head scratcher to some folks. Why would you ever believe that or do that with your money? I don't know, guys. But if you have ears to hear, it makes perfect sense. I think that is a difference. Maybe not the most practical, check it off the list kind of a difference, but one I think permeates everything else.
Mm.
So today we're going to downshift a little bit into little more practicals right here. And maybe
get out of the heady philosophical.
Yes, take off our togas and our laurel wreaths and get into some of that nitty gritty, roll up our sleeves, get a little dirty in the practicals. Again, in some of these more practical and smaller differences, mm-hmm. but will help reveal and shine that light on some of the bedrock differences
mm-hmm.
that influence or are the reasons behind these seemingly small differences.
Mm-hmm. And even some of our differences, they're not going to be about the thing. It might be about the motive behind the thing. So just pay attention for that too.
I'm excited to get into that part of our conversation, but first, a quick word from the sponsor of this episode. I'd like to introduce you to our sponsor, the Catholic Financial Planners Network. CFPN financial advisors prove that you can make great investment returns by doing wonderful things with your money. These advisors are not just numbers people. They're faithful Catholics who actively improve the finances of their clients. They help you make wise financial decisions that benefit you and reflect our values of stewardship and charity. To find an advisor who shares your financial and spiritual values, follow these steps. 1. Search CFPN's growing directory of certified financial planners. 2. Discuss your goals and values with a few potential advisors and find one you'll love working with. 3. Begin and start walking towards a brighter future for you and your family with the right advisor by your side. Whether it's saving for retirement, funding education, or navigating taxes, they're here to support you every step of the way. Visit CatholicFinancialPlanners.com to learn more about how CFPN can help you reach your goals while staying true to your values. That's CatholicFinancialPlanners.com.
So this very first one, let's kick it off.
Oof.
Let's kick it off. We're going to talk about life insurance.
Yeah, man.
Dave says you should have some, and so do we.
Agreed.
But wait, there's more.
There's more. I mean, we even agree on the type of life insurance. You should have a term life insurance policy. That means it is only good for a certain term of years, right? Good for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, etc. None of this unlimited for as long as you're living, you're paying it. Life insurance policy. Again, mm-hmm. We agree on that.
We could have a whole conversation about whole life versus term life a whole nother day.
But that's a different podcast.
There's nuances there even.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about term life. We both agree on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, one small thing though, is that Dave, without hesitation, will say, hey, 20 years, that's all you need.
Or less, like 10 sure, to 20 years.
Yes. We're telling you probably need more time. And not just because it's a Catholic thing to be more cautious. Absolutely not. It's because we understand a fuller call to be open to life.
Mm-hmm.
The childbearing years of a Catholic couple are most likely going to be longer in time and further into their age than they are for a Protestant couple who's totally fine with
contraception and just calling it good mm-hmm. after two and getting a sterilization.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the term life insurance, it's there to cover you and your dependents upon your death. If you have people who are financially dependent upon you, well, the insurance will help take care of the financial dependence part if you've passed.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're no longer in the house, they've grown up, they've graduated, all that stuff. Well, they're no longer financially dependent upon you. You don't need it anymore.
Right.
So if the term expires and then you expire, it's not a big deal.
They have their own income.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since we are probably going to be growing our families longer, well, that term that it's covered for needs to be longer as well.
So oftentimes we'll encourage couples it usually start around 20 years, but possibly 30.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're in your 20s, there's a very real reality that you may conceive your youngest child in your 40s. I know plenty of families who mm-hmm. welcome more children in their 40s. And you want the life insurance policy to last until that last child is going to be leaving the home.
Mm-hmm.
So in some situations, let's say you get married at age 21, it might even be longer because you're looking at a lot of life down the road and you might not be called to have kids still into your 40s, but you can't know that in your 20s. We don't know what the Lord's asking us to. Every time I've ever come up to the Lord and said, here's what I think the 5-year plan is. Oh man, does he put that through the paper shredder and then hand me something better? That's just true. And our Lord oftentimes likes to use our fertility and growing our families as a way to call us to sanctity and to holiness. And there's usually challenges and frustrations involved in surrender. And so this is just one of those ways that you can mitigate some of the stress that might come down the road by just taking care of this and making sure that you kind of cover those open to life years plus about 10 or 20 years beyond it
mm-hmm.
in case there is a new soul that our Lord asks you to take care of. It might not even be through your own fertility. You might adopt mm-hmm. as well. So again, just don't close the door where the Lord might keep it open, but be financially responsible and have much longer term windows. It might be a little bit more money, yes, but this is just one of those key differences between us and Ramsey's approach.
Mm-hmm. It's a great example because it's a difference that on the surface, you go, oh, it's just a little bit longer. It's not that big a deal. But when we dig down a level or two, we see the fundamental difference in belief that then trickles down, as I say, up, that works its way through our lives into a difference where if we're just following the advice from someone who doesn't share that part of our faith, well, then we could be left out high
left
and dry when it's vital that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And out of no, of course, ill will of Dave or anyone else who would be giving you that advice, they're just not coming at it from the same perspective as you mm-hmm. or us.
Can't even
to understand
what those
needs might be.
Mm-hmm. Take us into number two.
Number two.
You got something in your pocket I punched.
Comes down to private school and just the role of school and education.
I'll add in homeschooling as well.
Ooh, okay. Add it in there. Mm-hmm. When we talk about these other schooling options, you're going to hear Dave just, nope.
He says, don't boo. Do it. Boo.
Boo.
Public school all the way. And we have an entire podcast episode dedicated to just this.
Mm-hmm. But I want to look at why there's a difference here. Now, of course, I don't want you, going into piles of debt to send your kids to some
six-figure a year kindergarten.
Yes, exactly. I'm probably going to say boo to that. But we can't look at education merely as job training, as a means to the end of a job.
Or daycare while I go work my job so I can pay my debt off.
Mm-hmm. That's
free daycare.
Not the role of education. Education should form our humanity, our intellect. It should teach us how to think about things, how to learn, how to evaluate. Education is very important, especially as the world becomes more and more hostile towards some of our beliefs and is going to use education and the educational systems that our children, by default, I guess, might be a part of in order to teach something contrary to the faith.
Mm-hmm. Now, my brain is blanking. Newborn sleep loss. There is a, is it in the catechism or an encyclical that talks about how parents are charged as the primary educators of their children? That does not mean everybody needs to be homeschooling. Okay. Don't misunderstand that, but it does mean that parents need to be those in charge of their education of their children and making sure that it's good and aligned with our Catholic faith and our Catholic values.
Yeah.
And so there's a real responsibility there and a heaviness on parents to do due diligence and not just nilly-willy enroll your kids somewhere that may not be good for their human formation or especially the formation of their soul.
Yeah. It's not, of course, written anywhere. The church doesn't teach, I'd say, explicitly that the parents are the chief chefs for the children or in charge of their nutrition. But we are. Mm-hmm, it's part of raising the kids. Now, that doesn't mean we can't go to a restaurant. But sure. I think it would mean if we've got our plan for what's going to be nutritious for our kids, there's going to be some restaurants we don't go to because they serve junk. Or there might be some restaurants
that we don't go to often.
Yeah. Or there might be some restaurants we intentionally seek out to go to because we know how good the stuff is there for us.
You and your food analogies.
It just flows out like melted butter, baby.
Always a food analogy. But does this mean you can never choose public school? Absolutely not. Again, we have a podcast episode we'll link to in the show notes. If you want to dive deeper on this, we did a whole 45-minute discussion on it. But it is well within your discernment as a parent to decide that you are going to stay in debt longer by a year or two or three or even 4 years to say, we're going to choose and prioritize private Catholic school or for one parent to stay home and homeschool. We're going to be single income because we have discerned that that is the best schooling option for our children. Mm-hmm. And that can and ought to trump debt payoff. It's just that important. Mm-hmm. Now you can decide that that's not what you'd like to do. That's fine as well. As long as you're making a good discernment and you've really looked at all your options and, you know, you've stepped out with your spouse in agreement and in faith in the choices that you're making, great, fine. But I want people to be more intentional about this and to not feel ashamed because I've heard people call in to Dave Ramsey's show and get screamed at because they are choosing Catholic schooling and they have a perfectly good public school option just down the street and it's free. That's not okay. You cannot come in and tell a parent that the financial goal is going to trump a parenting decision as important as education that really truly could ripple out and influence over the entire life of this child into eternity. Mm-hmm. Now, again, 30 years ago, we were in a different landscape. You could still continue to form your child really well in the faith and send them into public school, and it might not actually cause that much of a detriment, if mm-hmm. you will, because most of the other kids kind of shared the same thing. It is a different landscape today, especially in certain parts of the country.
Yeah.
You may be in a place that's not as affected, but there are absolutely places where it could be very harmful for you to send your children into the public school. Mm-hmm. And so that's a difference that we've got.
Yep. It's just an opportunity for discernment to understand what is going to be best for your family.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And again, one last time, it's because we have a fundamentally different understanding of what education is and what it's for. It's not just job training. It really does form it's part of our human formation and our intellect.
All right, let's tackle this last one quickly.
Ooh, the last one. And again, we've got, I think, a standalone episode talking about what we teach on this. But when it comes down to tithing, I remember the room. I remember where we were when we were leading one of Dave's classes at our parish. And he's talking about tithing. He goes, tithing, that's, you know, as a Bible-believing Christian, that means it's 10% to your local church. And he leaves it at that. And I think it was after the video.
We had to stop and pause.
Stop and talk about this, because we just a second, guys. You just heard that no matter what, you have to give 10% to your, what he would call, local church, and then you're good.
Let's talk about the 10%.
Let's talk about the 10%. 10%, the tithe, the earliest biblical basis there is when Abraham goes and sees Melchizedek and gives him a tenth of the spoils or whatever of the victory in Thanksgiving.
And there's a lot of other parts
over and over again throughout the Old Testament. And then I've heard a case that the 10 lepers, one comes back to say thanks. Maybe loosely you could, you know, tie a string across the room.
I thought that was more about the ingratitude of the nine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So you might hear that one as some New Testament tithing, but I think that's a little, you know,
stretch.
Conspiracy theory guy with the strings trying to attach things.
So we oftentimes teach that 10% is a good starting line. And the reason is because Jesus fulfilled everything in the Old Testament, right? And not when he fulfilled it, things just didn't fall away and go away. He ups the ante. So in the Old Testament, it says,
thou shalt not kill.
Yes, there we go. Sorry, my baby brain. The sleep
Try not
loss.
To forget that one when you're mad at me later.
but now in the New Testament, Jesus says, if you're angry enough at someone in your heart, it's like you've killed him.
Ooh.
In the Old Testament, don't commit adultery. Well, Jesus says, if you look at a woman lustfully in your heart, you've already done that. He fulfills it, but then he ups the ante. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people always to start at the 10%, to start, to give that feelable amount. For a lot of people, that's going to be an uncomfortable amount, but it's doable. Mm. And you can still have lights on, a roof over your head, food on your table, maybe a little bit of extra, you know, for clothes and a date here and there, etc. You can be okay. You're doing well to prioritize that. But you're saying no to certain things, and that hurts. You're saying no to some lifestyle stuff so you can prioritize the 10%.
Now, I would say up to this point, except for the Jesus ups the ante business, you're going to hear this from Dave. You're going to hear him say, you really should tithe. You're probably going to be able to live and tithe. That's still there. So I want to make sure that's clear, that that's what he would teach. But it's very important to understand this whole idea that, yes, we are called, sure, to tithing. But Jesus, yes, he ups the ante. He asks for more. He makes it more demanding upon us.
Mm-hmm. So there are situations where if you cannot meet the needs of your household and take care of yourself, you ought not to be giving 10% for absolutely that season.
Absolutely not.
The widow who came and gave her a penny or something, I mean, the Bible says that she gave all she had. Mm-hmm. It might not have been all her money, but it was probably all of her disposable money. Mm-hmm. And it might not have been 10%, but it was really everything she had beyond extra. That's a big deal. And, you know, he's kind of scolds those who gave from their surplus wealth, because if we're looking at Jesus as fulfilling this and then upping the ante, it means that 10% is now the starting line. There might be a couple of scenarios where you discern that you're not in a season where you can give that, and that's all right. Mm-hmm. As long as when you get back on your feet and able, you get back to the starting line of 10%. And then it's all the way up from there. St. Catherine Drexel was giving 90% of her taxable
probably
income.
Probably, I think it was probably 100.
Really, it was. But she was giving a radically high amount of her money because that's what God called her to. I know very wealthy people that are giving 50% of their wealth away every single year because they are obedient to this teaching to live radically. Now, Dave will talk about live and give like no one else way later on in the journey, but this might be something you're called to right away if you do have the means and you do have the calling to give this generously. So let 10% be the starting line. Of course, there could be situations where you're pausing on that, but then really, sky's the limit there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the church teaches explicitly. And in the encyclical Rerum Novarum, it says, part of it says, true, no one is commanded to distribute to others that which is required for his own needs and those of his household, mm-hmm. nor even to give away what is reasonably required to keep up becomingly his condition in life, for no one ought to live other than becomingly. That's a little quote there from Thomas Aquinas, I believe. But when what necessity demands has been supplied, and one's standing fairly taken thought for, it becomes a duty to give to the indigent out of what remains over. Of that which remaineth, give alms. It is a duty, not of justice, save in extreme cases, but of Christian charity, a duty not enforced by human law. But the laws and judgments of men must yield place to the laws and judgments of Christ the true God, who in many ways urges on his followers the practice of almsgiving. It is more blessed to give than to receive.
Mm. Okay. Bada bing, bada boom. So that clarifies what the church actually teaches on 10%.
Mm-hmm. It's not a requirement.
It's not.
But boy, I think it's a good idea.
It is a precept of the church.
Not tithing, but
no,
giving.
Giving in some yes, tangible
ways. We are called to help supply for the material needs of the church. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But that does not mean 10% to your local church.
No.
What's fantastic is the universal church is
the local church.
Our local church. I think that would be the right way to say, or maybe we flip it around, right? Where our local church is the universal church. No, I think it's right.
We're
first
one body.
Way, right? We are one body. We don't have a food pantry at our parish, but there's one a couple parishes over, and we can give to that. Or we can give to the one downtown, or we can give to the apostolate that's helping the homeless in this other city, or we can give, I got goosebumps up and down my whole body thinking about this, because we're part of this thing that is so much bigger than us, so much bigger than our local area. And in giving to that, I can help the whole world, the way that my heart
literally
breaks, the way the Lord has made me to respond to him in generosity. I've got brothers and sisters working there already whom I can join.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a couple of weeks ago, actually, somebody had shared about a friend they have ministering to Catholics in China, and they only could share this giving link for a 24-hour window for the safety of the ministers and the local church there, because they're essentially hidden. And, you know, we just adopted. We kind of had the most expensive month of our year. We do stretch ourselves. But I was like, I can't not do something. Mm. So I'm bottoming out my own fun money, something, because this is too important. And yeah. I'm one with them. In the Eucharist, we're all together, and they need my help. Mm-hmm. And so we scraped it together. I don't even think I asked you.
No, it sounds great though. I'm in.
I knew you would be. You're with me to eat bread and water so we can go ahead and give it all the missions in the world. Maybe when we're later and the kids leave, that'll be what we do. But anyway, we just love giving. And some people though want to know, okay, break it down for me. Okay. I really ought to give to my home parish, yeah, right? Yeah. Yes, of course. I really should support maybe my diocese. Yeah. And then what should I give to other things like religious orders and missionaries and different apostolates that are out there or to, et cetera. People have come up with kind of a catchy number.
Yeah, thing. None of it is, this is not any sort of official teaching or anything like that. It's just something somebody somewhere thought up. And other people have seen it and passed it along.
It's helpful.
Made a tweak, passed it along. So please understand it at that level of authority of teaching. But the idea, and I'll start at kind of one thing and then the revision that we've also seen, is you give, if you're giving 10%, right, you give 5% or 50% of your giving to your local parish to help fund the ministry that is right there where you are in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. Then you can have that other half, the other 5% or 50%, however you think about it, for other good work that the church is doing other places. So that can include the diocese or this apostolate or these religious sisters who ask for donations, whatever it is. I've seen another kind of a little tweak on this, a revision here of 5 to the local parish, 3 to the diocese, 2 to other things, that food pantry, those apostolates, those organizations, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Again, this is in your discernment.
Exactly.
You can decide to jimmy rig the numbers however you feel led or in prayer.
Go all in on the parish.
Yeah, you can.
Whatever you'd like.
Wherever you, the Lord will speak to you inside of your heart. He'll tug you for the things that break his heart. He's going to put those in front of you and he's going to ask you to respond. And then go ahead and respond to him and find a balance between your giving so that you can include all of the things that you want to be giving to.
There is one thing we forgot to mention. We talked about 10%. Yes, 10%. It's a good thing to go for. It's not required. There is no church teaching. There's no church law. There's nothing in there saying you have to give 10%. This is not the Mormons where you got to share your tax return and they're going to hold you to it. That is not what the game we're playing here.
No.
And we've said, you know what? If you're putting 10% in the collection and you can't eat, stop putting 10% in the collection, please. Mm-hmm. Jesus doesn't want that money. He wants you to eat. However, there will be times for most of you listening to this where you can give 10% and it won't even matter to you. Or you won't even miss it. Then you need to give more. 10% is nowhere near enough. You're giving out of the extra. That's not what God wants. He wants you to give out of your need, out of, I could have used that for something else, but I chose to give it to you. That is so much more important. That level of, what did you call it? Uncomfortable giving, that feelable amount.
Sacrificial giving. Yeah.
A sacrificial gift. That's what we're called to do. That level of
just
where it
over
becomes
the
sacrificial. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right, Mother Teresa? You love, you give until it hurts,
and then you give
a little bit more.
All that's left is love.
There you go. So that's what we need to do with our financial gifts until we feel it. Sometimes in our lives, that's going to be 4%, maybe less. Other times, that's going to be 20. Who knows? But there will be times it's something we always have to constantly be evaluating and discerning. What are you asking me to do here? Mm-hmm. How much of this do you want? Right? You can imagine holding your bank accounts or your check, your paycheck or whatever it is, a big basket, right? Just hold it all up. How much would you just, you know what? Take what you want and then I'm going to bring it back down. That's beautiful. That's different, man. That's different than 10%. 10%, then he gets to do whatever he wants. Mm-mm.
Yeah, because then oftentimes what can happen there is somebody, potentially a very wealthy Christian can get caught in the world in some sense, because giving 10% still allows them to live a life of extreme luxury to a degree that is out of alignment with our call as disciples and harmful possibly to their soul, and could stunt their ability to be an apostle. St. Jose Maria Escrivá talks about that, that we just have to be careful. Mm-hmm. Not that money in and of itself is going to be something that distracts or corrupts you, but it has potential if it doesn't have the right boundaries. Mm-hmm. And giving is one of those things. It's kind of an antidote. And when we give in that right proportion, it kind of keeps us in a more healthy spiritual place.
I want to be fair.
Yeah.
I don't think Dave says, you give 10% and only 10% ever. He's going to encourage folks of greater means to give
absolutely
beyond that. But his stress of the 10% can make you think, oh, I have to. What's even worth giving if I can't give 10? And it's maybe not so much wrapped into the idea of tithing, but there's no consideration of the other part of it, right? There's the part we're giving. Great, make that real big, go beyond. But there do need to be some limits. And I think this will be a different episode, of course. But there need to be some limits that we impose on ourselves. Because even if we are given $10 million a year away, but we're still spending $50 million on us, or $3 million on us, there's still opportunity there to lead us into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
that's a different conversation.
There's a lot of different things going on there, but do know that we are called to this greater, more complete giving of ourselves that goes beyond the simple ideas of a percentage.
Yeah. So these were the low-hanging fruit, kind of the easier ones to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Openness to life and term life insurance, how we educate our children in relationship to maybe our financial goals, and then tithing.
Yeah.
I think we better cut this off. We better save more
for
next time.
Yes, including any that you've got. So if you've got questions, if you've got a topic, something you're curious about what the difference might be, send it on into us at email@walletwin.com. Put Dave in the subject line, or even better, click the link in the show notes and leave us a voicemail. We can include that in a future episode of this series.
Until next time, bye for now.
This episode is sponsored by the Catholic Financial Planners Network.